So we are holding on Kuf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. We got about 8 lines or so in tape, but we may as well go over the couple of lines. We may as well go over a couple of lines before that, so we're not in the middle of a sentence. Okay, so we were discussing the question like this. Really, actually, the sentence really began on the bottom of Kuf Samach Beis on the base. The question was, we said that if the signatures of the Edim are 2 or more blank lines away from the body of the shtar, then it's no good, because then you could end up writing something else in there and cutting off the top part of the shtar, and presto, you have a seemingly valid shtar with signatures of Edim on it. So we started talking about what is the definition of that 2 lines? We mentioned that, so we said, Reb Nachman Yitzchak had said that it must be hein va'aviron. It must be not only the space you need to write 2 lines of, for example, bases or galads or other letters like that that all fit within the body of the line, but also you evidently have to have space above and or below for the ascenders of some letters like lamas and descenders of some letters like langachos. Okay, so we'll start from Reb Shabsi Yom HaMishmei Dechizki, 5 lines from the top. So Reb Nachman Yitzchak established that you need Hein Va'aviron. Reb Shabsi Yom HaMishmei, which means that you need the space for what we called yesterday the X height of the letter, the space that you would need for a bays or a dalet or what have you, as well as some space for letters that would go above or below the rest of the letters that have ascenders and descenders above and below that, like a lamed or a langchah. So Reb Shabsi Omer Mishmei Dechizki is Shnei Shitin Sh'omru B'Ksav Yidei Edim. These 2 lines that we're talking about have to be where there's enough space for the Edim to be able to write 2 lines. L'Ksav Yidei Sofer, not necessarily the space that it would take the Sofer to write the lines. Now, the point of it is that Rashbam says typically a Sofer is able to write smaller, because like we said at the end yesterday, a Sofer usually is more expert at writing, so therefore he's able to write small. Whereas a regular person, like I was saying yesterday, if you practice Saffron, you'll find you have a very hard time making small, clear letters the way that a Sofer does.
Right, especially if you don't have a ballpoint pen or a felt tip pen.
Well, yeah. Obviously we're talking about they use a reed pen or a quill or whatever, yeah. So a Sofer trains himself to be able to write finely and still be able to write neatly, whereas the average person not. So the average person would take more space than a Sofer. The Ramban, by the way, says when we say over here Ksavi de Edim, it means the actual Edim themselves. Most of the other Rishonim say it doesn't necessarily mean the Edim, it just means a layman as opposed to a Sofer. Anyway, my timer, what's the logic? Because if you want to forge something, if you want to falsify something, you're not going to go to the Sofer and ask him, please add a couple of extra lines at the end of the shtar. Why would he do it? He doesn't want to lose his professional. He doesn't want to lose his professional. His good professional name. His reputation. So you yourself would go and try to add those 2 lines, and you yourself are not a trained sofer, and you wouldn't be able to write it as small and as neatly as the sofer. So therefore, only if you have that larger space. The kama. So we have to ask how much
what
space.
The ganef knows sofers.
It could happen, but you know.
Okay.
The kama, so how much are we talking about? How much space? Amr of Yitzchak Bar Elozik, then l'cha l'cha ze'al gabe ze'. For example, if you have the word l'cha on the top line, and underneath it you have the word l'cha also. Now, we're not talking about where they're exactly the word l'cha under the word l'cha, because then the ascender of the lamed is not going to be anywhere near the bottoms of the top letter.
Right.
What we mean is if you have it in such a way where the bottom of the line l'cha is about to touch the top of the lamed.
How do you know it's not lech l'cha?
It could be lech l'cha, yeah. It could be lech l'cha, yeah. Okay. That's true, actually. Tosfos does say that even if you don't literally have the leg of the chaf is directly on top of the lamed, you'd still need room enough. It would be the same amount. It would be the same amount of space. So again, you would need, in other words, alma kasava, which therefore means Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Elazar evidently holds. Therefore, shnei shittin va'avir. You need in total, 2 lines, meaning 2 X heights, as well as the 4 spaces around them. So you're going to have space for the tops of the lamed, the X height for the body of the letter, a space below it for the lines for the bottom of the line across, and the same thing on the second line. So to use the example that we were using yesterday, if you need, let's say, 5 millimeters for the ascender of a lamed or the descender of a chuf, and you need 10 millimeters for the body of the letter itself, so you're going to have 5, 10, 5, 5, 10, 5, for a total of 40. Rav Chiya Ba'ami Mishmei De'ula. Rav Chiya Ba'ami has in the name of Ula a different amount.
So again, two lines with ascenders and descenders.
With a, plus each one has to have its own room for ascenders and descenders, right? Right. Rav Chiya Ba'ami Mishmei De'ula. Again, Lamed Milamayla B'Kaf Milamata. It doesn't need to be that much. All you need is, for example, that you're going to have a Lamed sticking up above and a Kaf sticking out below. Which means, in other words, that he holds, you don't necessarily need to have that, if you have a Lang Lechaf and the Lamed, you don't necessarily need to have that each one has its own space. They can overlap in that space. So they're not going to be touching each other. Fine, you'll bend the top of the Lamed or whatever, which you sometimes see, sometimes in Sifrei Torah. So you need less, in other words. So you only need 5, 10, 5, which that 5 will be shared by both lines, another 10 and another 5, total 35 rather than 40. So the Rashbam makes a point of saying that that Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Elazar and Rabbi Chiya Ba'ami and the next opinion that we're going to have also are not disagreeing with Chizkiyah. Rabbi Shabsi had said in the name of Chizkiyah that you need two lines b'ksav yidei edim. So they're just explaining what does that mean. And by the way, also, I mean, so we had earlier Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak. The Rambam paskins like Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and he also paskins like Rabbi Chiya Ba'ami. Because the Meforshim on the Rambam say, the Noitzer Kalim on the Rambam say, the Rambam evidently holds, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying a general statement. You need hein va'avira. You need two spaces together with some room for ascenders and descenders. How much, whether you need separate space for ascenders and descenders, that you have the three different opinions. Over here, Rav Yitzchok Bar Elazar, Rav Chiya Ba'ami, and the next one that we're going to have, Rav Abo, and he chooses Rav Chiya Ba'ami's opinion, either because some of the Rishonim say because it seems more logical, that you can have a shared space in the middle there that you can use for ascenders of lamed and descenders of cloth. In a Sefer Torah, for example, you have that way. In a Sefer Torah, you're not obligated to have the full space between one line and the next such that if you had a lamed directly underneath a cloth, they're not going to touch. All you need is enough space that you can maneuver them around each other.
No falsification in a Sefer Torah.
That is the point still, but you have the point that the letters can't touch each other.
Yeah.
And yet you still have, you can have a shared space over there that can be used for the ascenders of lamed and descenders of chof, and they won't touch as long as you make sure they don't touch. So if you have, if the sofer is going to wind up with a lamed directly underneath a chof where they would touch, they'll have to make the lamed a little longer or make the lamed a little longer.
It seems like you would be even more machmir as Sefer Torah then.
No, but that's what we're saying. If you're allowed, no. Right, so with the Sefer Torah, it's not a problem of fraud, but here what we're talking about over here is if there's enough space that the person can conceivably think to himself, I can use, hey, there's this blank space here, I can use it to add something, so how much would there be? He would only do it in such a way if he's going to be able to write it cleanly without letters touching each other. Now, it's true, Shtar is not a Sefer Torah. Some letters can touch a little bit, but basically you're not going to want to have it all touching because it's going to end up looking like a smudge. So therefore, you're still going to have, it's still the same basic concept. So anyway, some of the Rosh Hashanah, the Rosh, for example, I think says that the reason why the Rambam holds according to Chiya Ba'ami, Mishmei De'ula, is because it seems the most logical. You have different other explanations among the Rosh Hashanah and among the Neisa Kalim of the Rambam, such as that he has three opinions over here, so he picks the middle one. But whatever it is, the Rambam evidently understands, that none of them are arguing with Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and none of them are arguing with Rav Shabsi either. They're each stating a different detail about it. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is saying that you need hein v'aviron. Rav Shabsi is adding to that the hein and the aviron have to be the way that a regular person would write it, not a sefer. And how much is the aviron? Now we have the three different definitions. You have an interesting other possibility. The Tosfos Reed, I think it is, mentions a possibility. Maybe what these different opinions are talking about is, given that we're saying what Rav Shabsi said, that you need the ksav yidei edim or like ksav yidei sofer, maybe the vote is, if you have enough space that a sofer who writes smaller would be able to write, if you have enough space that a regular person would be able to write, for example, two x heights, two bays and dalet heights, plus space for a sender, a space on top for an ascender, a space in the middle for ascenders and descenders, and a space on the bottom for descenders, that would be enough room for a cipher to be able to write two full lines with nothing touching. In other words, he says the three different opinions over here may be talking about what's the relationship between the ksav-yad of a regular person versus the ksav-yad of a cipher. Because after all, like you said, you have there is the remote possibility that the forger himself is going to be a cipher, so you do have to take that into consideration as well.
Okay.
So that's the thing. Either because he holds that the middle one is the most logical one, because yes, sure, it can happen that the top line of the two lines that you're gonna add there fourthly is gonna be the top line is gonna have langachops in it, and the second line is gonna have lamads in it. But normally, you'll be able to manage. You'd be able to manage with a space in between there that will be shared by both of them, rather than having to have a separate space for the line of thoughts and a separate space for the line.
Is there any trend in halacha to go back to the middle shita? Is that something when you said that?
Not generally, I don't think. But that's over here. That's what some of the Rishonim offer as a reason.
So why would we need a shita mechta halacha if essentially you were saying that even if you have two full lines? And two of your three.
Because that's what we're defining over here. What do we mean by two lines? We don't just mean two lines that are big enough to write bases and dalads. We mean two lines that are big enough to write langachops and lamads. But even so, with that, if you only had one and a half of those, in other words, if you had, for example, 5, 10, 5, and then another 5, that wouldn't be enough to make it possible.
Mm-hmm. So it has to be the pale mamash. It's shittel mechta. Shittel mechta of so one and a half of it, and you say, or
yeah. Yeah, okay. One and a half avirin wouldn't be enough to make it possible. Yeah,
two avirin.
Yeah, two. Well, even again, according to the first opinion over here, according to Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Elazar, anything less than four avirin, it'll be kosher, because you need four ones. According to the Pchir Ba'ami Meshmei De'ula, you need three. And then we have a third opinion, Rabbi Bo, I'm looking at Baruch Ben Levi, B'shita Achas. Rabbi Bo says all you need is, for example, the amount of space that you would need to write Baruch Ben Levi all in one line. So he evidently holds that the maximum space you can have between the body of the shtar and the edim signatures is one line, one x height, plus ascenders and descenders. So 5, 5, 10, 5 would be enough to make it.
20.
So
that has to be two lines.
No, but he would hold. In other words, he would say that when you have space for ascenders of an x height and a descender, that would be enough in principle to be able to write two lines over there. So Tosfos says, yeah, he is the most master. Tosfos says that actually it still is a little more than Shnei Shittin B'lei Avira. It still is, the figures I was using, just random figures that I pulled out of a hat, but in reality, Tosfos says it's not necessarily like that. The fact is, Tosfos says, one shitta plus Shnei Avirin, which is what Rabbi Bo says, must of necessity be a little more than two shittin without Avirin. In other words, if you were going to write two lines of stuff at the end of the shtar that didn't contain, you were careful, that they didn't contain any lamas and they didn't contain any langachops or what have you, that might take up, let's say, each line like that, each X height like that might take, let's say, for example, 10, and therefore two of them together is 20. Tosfos is saying that according to Rabbi Bohu, you have to say necessarily that one shita plus two avirim is more than 20. It's not 5, 10, 5, it's rather maybe 6, 10, 6. And therefore it comes out to 22. So therefore, you have enough room in there conceivably to write two 10-millimeter high lines of text that doesn't contain any langachos or lamads or what have you. And therefore, he says it would be possible. Whereas the previous Amiroyim aren't worried about that because they say that you're not going to do that. You're not going to try that l'chachila if you know you're not going to have the chance to, in case you have an ascender or descender in there and it's going to mess things up, you're not going to try it l'chachila. Whereas Rabbi Bo is concerned about that.
So you could practice. You could go and say, oh, then what can I write that has no ascenders and descenders.
It's true, but, you know, one thing is, I mean, you know, nowadays it's easy for us to draft things like that because paper is cheap. You know, back in those days, paper and parchment and what have you were expensive. Not necessarily would you have material to start writing a bunch of drafts on.
Who used to write on the big tablet? You don't remember, it was a few messages ago. It's not kosher. So I remember he used to give loans and it was an older man.
Don't remember. Okay. All right, anyway, let's go on. Okay. All right. So anyway, so we have these various opinions again. So the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch Paskins, according to the first statement of Rav Nachman Yitzchok, they hold is not necessarily arguing with any of the other ones. It is true you need Hein Vaziron. The second statement of Rav Shabsi in the name of Chizkiah, that it's Viksavi De Edim, is also true. That's again not arguing with anything that we're going to say further. And then within all that, you have the different opinions, how much avu you need, how much space for ascenders and descenders you need, and the halacha is like the middle opinion that you, as long as you have space for two lines with the total of three spaces for ascenders and descenders, so 6, 10, 6, 10, 6, for example, then that would be enough to make the shtar kosher. And we discussed yesterday the possibility, of course, that you could fill up that space with signatures of possible aid. But if you, we're talking about if you didn't. And now the Gemara is now going to talk about another possibility that you could, in theory, you would think that you could use something else. So we'll see that. So we'll see that next. Amar Rav. That's the halacha, as long as you have that two spaces with three avirim. That's the Rambam paskins that way again, because he paskins either because he decided that Rukhiya Ba'ami's opinion is the most logical one, or because it's the middle one. So this way you're not being too machmir or too mekel. Yeah.
There's no discussion on the Ramah between them.
No, the Mechaber and the Ramah both agree with that. Okay. Omer Rav, lo shonu ela ben edim l'ksav. All of this that we're talking about, that if you have two spaces and it's possible, two blank lines, it's possible, is only if that's between the edim and the body of the shtar. But what about at the bottom of the shtar, another thing you can have? So you have the body of the shtar, you have the signatures of the edim. Underneath that, another thing which you may well have in a shtar is the asharta, which is also called the henpek. We call it the kiyum. It has a number of different names. It has a number of different names in halacha. Basically, this is, eventually, a shtar comes to Beis Din. It has to be certified that this is, in fact, a valid shtar, that these are valid, so that these are, in fact, the genuine signatures of these edim. So Beis Din will write a henpek on it. They'll say that the shtar is brought to us. The most plotted the Chabah, we were sitting as a Beis Din of three, and the shtar was brought before us, and we recognize that these signatures belong to Pliny and Pliny, and we certify that the shtar is valid, and they sign their names on it. So that's good. In some places we call it a henpek, here we call it an asharta. There's a few different names for it. So Aval ben Edim l'asharta. So if you have space between the signatures of the Edim and the asharta, after the Tuva Nami, even if you have a lot of space, it's still kosher. So the question is why? Maishna ben Edim l'ksav. Why? You're saying that if that between the body of the shtar and the signatures of the Edim, if you have two spaces, you have a problem. Juma Mazayef for cost of my debay. Because you could conceivably falsify, you could add more text in that two spaces and write whatever you want. The Hasimi Sadi, and then you have kosher signatures of Edim on it, which anybody would recognize as being their signatures. And we said yesterday, the only reason why it works if you only have one blank line is because anyway, Edim were made in Meshita Achrona, because you anyway can't derive anything as far as the details of the shtar from the last line. So if there's only one blank line, you have no problem. But well then, by that logic, Bain Edim La Asharta Nami, wouldn't you have the same problem if it's between the Edim and the Asharta Nami? Then you have also Mazayah because of my deboy. You could also conceivably you'd be in a position to be able to write whatever you wanted. You'd be able to write under the signatures of the Edim whatever you want above the Asharta. V'chasimi Sadi, and then you have Edim, and more to the point, you have a Kiyum on it.
Well,
yeah, because the signature, the kiyum, the asharta is already there. You can have a whole shtar written over there, and yeah.
How much space for one line?
No, so that's what we're saying. According to Rav, we're saying it doesn't matter how much space you have. You could have the signature of the Edim end here, and you have the asharta down here. So we're asking, why is there a problem that you could conceivably write a whole other shtar over here, and presto, you have an asharta at the bottom of it.
There's only one thing. It's either the shtar or not.
It shows that it's a genuine shtar. Fine.
Well, what are you going to write? He owes me another $100. You cannot. That's not.
No, you're going to cut. You're going to cut everything on top, and you're going to get 280 that signs.
So you have the top shtar has just 280 on it. Fine. But then you're going to have now a bottom shtar, which you just wrote yourself, right, which has an ashauta at the bottom of it, which based and certified this is a genuine shtar.
You cut underneath the 280 on top.
It's the
asharta
that we say that has two lines on it, or it's
no. We're saying if you have a shtar that has an asharta on it, then we're saying the Beis Din can put the Ashauta wherever they want. They can put it even way below the signatures of Eid.
It sounds like it's between the Ashauta, the Nusach of the Ashauta, and the Eidim. They're signing the Ashauta.
Where do you see that?
Oh.
Yes, Abena Edim, between the Edim who signed on the Shtar itself and the Kiyum, which is called Ashauta al Shem Bishanu Vikemuhu, Hakosabot, then Shtar Shakosabot Henvik, Dino Ashauta, Afilat Hilkios, Mishne Shittim Kosher, then even if you have, yeah, no, we're talking between the signatures of the Edim and the Ashauta, which is further down on the page.
Right, so my question is, what could you write, what could you add to Ashauta? You can't just add. He owes me really more money than what I already wrote.
You could write that. You could write he sold me a tauka. You could whatever. You know. You could.
Wouldn't it be established that the sharita is just like the standard nusach, like a start.
Okay, so that's actually we're gonna sort of get into that. The question is basically there's a long shacham that's actually in Hilchah Halvah that discusses the question based on what the Gemara is going to say over here. Do we assume that conceivably Beis Din could write an ashauta on something which is an incomplete shtar in itself? But be that as it may, even if not over here. So never mind that over here. What you could conceivably have, so again, if you have all that blank space, you could write an entire new shtar, forged signatures of Edim, you have a shtar that ends over here and the Edim over here. Then you have a space. Then down here you have the Ashauta. Okay. What's to prevent you from cutting this over here? You have a blank space over here. You'll write out a whole star over here. You'll forge two signatures of Edim over here.
Edim in the middle.
You cut that whole part. Fine, whatever. Yeah, there's a star. You don't need it.
Sounds like these matches between the Edim
and the Ashauta.
Oh, the Edom from the first star.
That's what I'm saying. If you have blank space over there, you're going to put a whole star over there. You're going to forge signatures of Edom, and you're going to bring it to Beis Din. What do you mean? I don't recognize these signatures of Edom. Look, there's a star at the bottom. Obviously, Beis Din found it valid.
Right.
So why aren't we afraid of that? That's the question. Maishna ben Edim l'ksav duma v'zayach across the Maidaboy. Why is it between the Edim and the main and the body of the shtar? You can't have two lines. Duma v'zayach because you may forge the cost of Maidaboy and write whatever you want there. V'chassimi sadi, and then you're going to have Edim that are signed on it. In that case, ben Edim l'ashauta nami. Don't you have the same problem between the Edim which are from the first shtar which are above and the ashauta below? Nami v'zayach across the Maidaboy. You can also write whatever you want over there and even forge signatures of Edim. V'chassimi sadi, and you'll have Edim that are signed over there, and you have an ashauta show which makes it look like everything is on the up and up. The answer is demetiously. Yes, but what you have to do is, if you're going to have the ashauta further down, then you have to be metayit. What does metayit mean? So the Rashbam says malach l'choy b'dyo. You have to make it dirty with ink. Now on the face of it, if you have
draw
that
a big line, like so, okay,
hold on.
This page was less than
wait.
Blank.
Yeah, but. From the lotion of the Rashbam is mashma that what you do is you make that entire thing one big blob of ink.
Oh wow!
Now Tosfos asks on that, don't you have a problem over there? Conceivably, then what's to prevent the person from then going and erasing that whole thing and making it look like okay, there's an erased area over there and writing a new shtar? We'll talk on Amud Beis about what is allowed to be written and what's not allowed to be written on an erased area, but whatever. Therefore, Tosfos prefers a different explanation, which is that. What you could do, don't make the whole thing one big blob of ink. Instead, sort of like what you said, make lines over there or dots or whatever, so that it'll be clearly visible that there's blank parchment here that was never written on, and then there's parchment over here that had dots written on it or lines or what have you. And that way, if you try erasing it, it'll be more obvious. It would be more obvious that there were lines over there rather than just looking like one uniform thing. So the shach on this whole simon, like I said, the shach on this topic in Shulchan Aruch has a whole long discussion about all the ins and outs of these dinim, and he has a whole detailed explanation of the sugya according to the Rashbam versus according to other Rishonim. So he mentions that maybe the Rashbam figures that it's not such a problem what Tosfos is saying because he says he learns actually the problem is not so much that you may erase the whole thing and write another shtar on it. The problem rather is that there may have been something there that was written that's to the detriment of the Baal Shtar, and therefore now he covered it up with ink. So therefore, but if you do that, it's still going to be recognizable that there were letters over there, even if you cover it up afterwards with ink. So therefore, the Rashbam is not concerned about making the whole thing be one big blob of ink, because the problem is not so much a blank space. The problem is that there may have been something there detrimental, and it'll still be recognizable even after that.
The whole reason why like a bottom part of the shot, right? In case there was a raised area,
that's kiyum, not something else. That's what we talked about yesterday, that at the end of the body of the shtar, before the signatures of the Edim, you write such and such a word was written on a erased area or whatever. Here we're talking about an entire area that might be erased. Yeah. Okay. So that's the metayis lay. In modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the word tiyuta, which is evidently derived from the Gemara, to mean like a draft. I guess it's on the basis of that if we're saying over here that's sort of like you scratch lines of ink over there or whatever, so like sort of like the tiyuta would be like you use it for scratch paper or whatever, I don't know, anyway. Okay, so anyway, so if you do that, if you have that whole space filled up with a blob of ink, according to the Rashbam, or lines or dots or whatever, according to Tosfos and the Rambam, then you've taken care of the problem. Now there's no possibility of something being written above the Asharta. The question is, fine, why don't we say then if you have a blank space between the body of the shtar and the edim, do the same thing. Do the same kind of thing, fill it up with a blob of ink or lines of ink or whatever, and then you don't have a problem that we described before, that you could conceivably write a couple extra lines of stuff over there. The answer is Amri, because they answered, Sadi Apsyuta Hudachasimi, because then we might end up thinking, okay, so the Edim signed on the tuta, they signed regarding this blob of ink or regarding these lines or whatever. Fine. In other words, the Edim are not always such expert people. Fine. You give them something to sign, they'll sign it. You know, they're not gonna pay attention.
Obviously
then it wouldn't be visible. We mean they're signing regarding the blob of ink. You'll have the body of the shtar, you'll have a blob of ink, and underneath it you'll have the signatures of the Edim. Mm-hmm. So over here we could end up thinking that they signed because of the blob, and then afterwards if the blob is erased, then you have a problem over there, as opposed to as we're going to say. So the question is, Ben Edim al Asharta Nami Amri Beidin Atziyuta Udosimi. Why don't you say the same thing then in the case of the Asharta? Maybe then Beis Din is only certifying the blob. The answer is Beijing Atsur to Loy Chasimi.
In a practical sense, it makes very difficult to understand why someone would do a big blob when they could just write a simple line.
Well, that's why Tosfos is saying that instead it should be lines anyway, because that way it'll be clearly visible that this thing only had.
Yeah,
you don't just want to have one line though, because one line is a little easy to erase. You might want to have at least several lines or dots or whatever. Yeah, that's what Tosfos says. The Mikudos says Shuros. That this way you can tell that it wasn't originally erased.
I mean, because if I was in the Beis Din and I was doing this, I would put my henpeck right next to it instead of making a blob, because it's like, go get the ink for the
fine
blob.
If for whatever reason, I mean, right, the fact of the matter is the halacha is, as we're going to get to soon, the Asharta should be much closer to the shtar than that. We're going to talk on other days, we're going to have Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. We're actually going to talk about whether Rabbi Yochanan is necessarily arguing with Rav. Now here we're talking the point of Rav's opinion.
Uh-huh.
You can have the Asharta further away, but
if
you do that, there's got to be a blob or lines or whatever in between there. So we're asking, why aren't we afraid then that we're going to assume that the Asharta was about the blob rather than about the shtar itself? And the answer is, they did not. Tzuka lechasimi. Beis Din are more careful. They're not going to sign an Asharta about a blob or meaningless lines of ink or whatever. They're going to be talking about the actual shtar. So therefore, if we have a blob over there, big deal. It doesn't take away. It still means the Asharta refers to the shtar above it, as opposed to Edim. I mean, or they might sign Stam. Okay, you bring me something. The Rashbam mentions a similar concept that we learned in Gittin. For example, that if you have a get where at the bottom of it, after the nusach of the get, you write, for example, say hello to Pliny, and then the Edim sign, then it's possible. Because what if the Edim are only signing on the saying hello to Pliny? So rather say it'd be a similar kind of thing over here. With that said, again, that long shach that I'm talking about over there in Chosh and Mishpat has a discussion about it also. He says, come on, I mean, why would Edim be signing on a blob? So that's why he explains the shitase, that we're not talking about over here, that we're afraid there may have been a blob there, lahatila, but rather there may have been text there that is detrimental to the owner of the shtar. He, let's say, for example, it has a condition under which the loan won't have to be repaid or whatever, so he doesn't want that, so he instead puts ink over it. When it comes to the Edim is signed directly underneath the shtar, and the body of the shtar may well include such a rider or whatever. As opposed to, you're not going to have such a thing after the signatures of the Edim. So we're not talking about what Edim will or won't do or what Beis Din will or won't do. We're talking about, practically speaking, the signatures of the Edim come after any after any codicils or additional information or whatever like that. Whereas the Asharta comes only after the signatures of the Edim. You're not going to have any extra information in there. So if you see a blob above the Asharta, you know it was a blob all along. You know there's no possibility there was ever anything else written there to begin with. Okay. Fine. What about, though, we have another problem. The Leichus Duma Gaius Leila Ela. Okay, why aren't we concerned? We're saying over here that you have this tuta over here. We're saying that's fine. The you have this blob or these lines or whatever under which you have the Asharta. Why aren't we concerned that you might cut off Duma Gaius Leila Ela? You may cut off the top shtar. Up until now, we were talking about not necessarily you're going to cut off. So that's the thing. We mentioned before cutting off the top shtar, but we're not really. Up until now, we weren't really considering that. Up until now, we were talking about the possibility that you might erase the top shtar and rewrite something over there. Which, by the way, that's another thing. The Shach points out, and before him, the Tosfos Rid points out something similar. There's maybe less of a concern about that because if they find out that you falsified it, you've lost your original shtar as well. You not only don't have the new thing that you wrote, you don't even have the old shtar at all. As opposed to here, we're talking about another possibility that you're going to cut off the top shtar completely. Fine, the top shtar is left with its edim. Fine, it doesn't have an ashar, it's a big deal. It's still worth something. It still has edim on it, after all, as long as you can find another Beis Din to certify it or whatever. Meanwhile, you're going to have a blank piece of paper with an ashar at the bottom. You're going to erase that whole area of the blobs of ink. Because of my deboy, you'll write whatever you want over there. Machdim Sadi, and you're going to have Edim signed at the bottom, and a henpik, and a shouta at the bottom.
But Omar, you just replace the top, basically.
Yeah.
But Edim would do that?
No, again, well, first of all, you could find false Edim, but the point is he himself might forge signatures of Edim.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the main point is you have an Asharta at the bottom. Anybody who comes and says, wait a minute, these signatures are forged, or what are you talking about? The Beis Din of Pliny and Pliny said that it's good.
Yeah, I can understand that Edim don't know the halachas where to sign, but that Edim would see that their signature is being used for a false act.
But how would they know? Once you have an asharta, then that's it. The inacha meister based in klum. So you could say, you know, you have the signatures of Reuven and Shimon. Where are Reuven and Shimon? Well, they died 10 years ago. There's an asharta, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, but they're signing. They're signing while the asharta is still there.
Right.
No, but I'm saying, I'm not saying necessarily that you get false Edom to sign. He himself goes and forges signatures that he claims are Reuven and Shimon. You're going to say, wait, that doesn't look like Reuven and Shimon's handwriting. Yeah, but the Beis Din of Pliny said that it's good.
Even with that, the first part of the Gefer has the name, what city you're from, that's basic information of the list.
But here we're talking about, again, if you have a blank space above the Asharta, you could cut off the top shtar. This is what we were talking about before, except that didn't really belong to that Gemara. Before, we were talking about the possibility you might erase the top shtar and rewrite something. Now we're talking about you might cut off the top shtar below the signatures of the Edim, do whatever with that to keep it, do whatever with it. You'll write a whole new shtar on the bottom of here on such and such a date, Pliny borrowed from Pliny money, signed Reuven, signed Shimon, and at the bottom is an Asharta. Why aren't we concerned about it? And all you have to do that is erase the area where the tuta was. You're saying that an ashauta can be underneath the tuta, can be underneath an area of blobs of ink. But what about you could erase those? You could erase those blobs.
Erase the entire shtar if you want to.
Again, so that's what I'm saying. So the Shach points out, you may not, if you have already a valid shtar, you may not want to take the chance of erasing the whole thing and writing something completely different, because then you stand to lose what you had originally. Like, if you originally had a shtar that Reuven owes you $100, and now you don't even have that. As opposed to, though, to cut off the top shtar, and you still have that shtar that says that Reuven owes you $100, signed by Shimon and Levi. And now you're going to write another shtar that says that Reuven owes you another $1,000 and have it signed by Shimon and Levi. That you might do.
The size of that shtar would
it'll be smaller, big deal.
Much smaller.
Yeah, big deal. There's no minimum size for a shtar. We're going to talk about that in a minute.
That should
hold on.
Wallet size.
Yeah. There's not necessarily a minimum size for a shot.
No minimum size.
Hold on. We'll talk about that.
Besides which, we also
didn't say how much space there can be between the shtar and the ashauta. You could have the shtar being over here and the ashauta way down here, and you have plenty of room for a shtar in here. But that's the point.
It could be legal paper shtar.
No, there's no specific size of shtar. It's not like a government grant. It's not like it has to be a government form on legal size paper.
To prevent problems, it shouldn't be this year. How much is that?
No, but that's what Rob was saying, that there isn't any. But we're saying you do have to metay it. You do have to fill it up with blobs of ink or whatever. But we're asking, won't you be able to erase the blobs and claim
now,
again?
The word metay, what does it usually mean?
It doesn't usually mean anything else. I think this is the only Gemara that uses it. So I don't know.
The Gemara, as far as I'm concerned,
Steinsaltz mentioned that maybe it comes from the word tit, which means dirt. Or maybe it's not really supposed to tie it with two tesses, but rather midayet, maloshin dioi. Okay, whatever it is.
I looked it up in my thing and it said smudge, smear.
Yeah, that works. Okay. And in fact, Rav said that if you have a shtar where the entire thing was erased previously, if you have a piece of paper where the entire thing was at some point erased and a whole new shtar and edim sign on it, it's kosher. Because as long as we recognize those signatures, and as long as the Gemara is going to talk about later, the top part was only erased once, then we know it's a valid shtar. So therefore, you can tell between whether it was erased once or twice. But the point of the matter is that over here, if we're saying, so you have this whole area full of smudges or blobs or whatever it is, you could erase that part, write a whole new shtar with edim over there,
right.
You have an ashauta underneath, and presto, you have a good shtar.
But if you have
the ashauta directly underneath the shtar, then you have no problem.
So
that's what I was saying. That's what I was saying that the Torah is supposed to read. And the Shach say, you're not necessarily going to go and erase your whole shtar and write a new one, because if the forgery is found, then you've lost everything. You've lost the new shtar because it's shown, and you've also lost the old shtar because it's gone.
He makes the whole shtar $1. He doesn't choose to lose it. And then we'll change.
Yeah, okay.
If somebody else is going to agree
to have a shtar written for borrowing from him $1, you know, come on, Ehud asked the napsha, yeah. Then that's that. Okay. So it's good, according to Rav Kahana, who holds that this last din that we mentioned, that if you have a shtar where the whole body of the shtar, as well as the signatures of the edim, is all on an erased area, that it's valid. If you say that's according to Shmuel, shatter, then fine, it works out. Shmuel holds such a thing as kosher. Rav evidently would hold it's kosher. Rav doesn't have to agree with that. Fine. So Shmuel wouldn't necessarily be saying that the ashauta can be so far away from the shtar precisely for that reason. Rav doesn't have to agree with that. Rav could say that a shtar that's all written on an erased area is completely possible. Therefore, there's no problem. Go ahead and make the ashauta as far from the shtar as you want. Fill it up with blobs. There's no possibility of erasing the blobs and writing something else, because according to Rav, we could assume such a shtar would in fact be possible, and you're home free. But according to Rav Tavyumi, who says that this last din about a shtar that's all written on an erased thing, if you say, according to Rav Tavyumi, that he says that in the name of Rav, then what are you going to say? Rav seems to be contradicting himself. On the one hand, he's saying that a shtar can be written on an erased piece of paper, a previously erased piece of paper. The entire shtar in the Edim, Rav, is saying that. On the other hand, he's telling us that you can have the ashauta as far as you want from the body of the shtar and fill it up with blobs of ink, and there's no problem. How? Then you could erase the blobs. You have an area over there where, according to Rav Tavyumi, saying in the name of Rav, you could add another shtar there. Yeah.
Rav Tavyumi is not the same as
Rav Ravashi. No, Rav Ravashi is generational.
He's the first generation.
Yeah, okay. The Rashbam points out, I mean, really, you have you could ask such a general question that the Rashbam says about any shtar that has a hen fit. Why aren't we concerned about that you erase the top shtar? Again, that's what you have the various other Mephoshim who explain that there it's not such a problem, because nobody's going to go and erase a perfectly valid shtar to write another one. As opposed to a blank space, you might try your luck with it. Yeah. Okay. The answer is Kasamar. We could say, according to that Rav does hold another din. Kol ki hai gavna, it is true, if you have a shtar that has a henpik on an unerased part of the parchment, but Meanwhile, the body of the shtar and the agim are on a non-erased part. Okay. In that case, we cannot, in fact, rely on the ashauta. We will need a new set of edim or a new beis din to recognize the signatures of edim. So in that case, we're good. Because what's the whole problem we were concerned about, that you're going to have a shtar that's written on an erased area where really there were blobs there before and you erased them and wrote a new shtar and forged signatures of edim,
right,
and you have what looks like a valid ashauta at the bottom? What Rav is saying, though, is that Rav
would hold
that in that case, we kaka would ignore the ashauta. We would say in that case, you can't say the shtar is kosher just because it has an ashauta at the bottom. We're going to need to bring back in those edim themselves to testify, or bring other edim who recognize their signatures, another beis din that has their signatures on file, or whatever, all the usual kinds of things that you can bring behind the shtar.
Why are we doing that?
We're doing that because that avoids the problem that we just discussed.
Oh, we're always going to do it, even if we have a hendek.
If you have a shtar that's written on unerased paper and the signatures on unerased paper and you have a hendek at the bottom, you have an ashauta at the bottom, no problem. But if you have a scenario like this, where they bring you a shtar that has the area where the shtar and the edim are signed is erased. And underneath it, you have an unerased area with the ashauta. We're saying we're going to ignore that ashauta.
That's according to Rav.
That's what we're saying. According to Rav, we can use that to answer. So therefore, he can say that you can have as much space as you want between the shtar and the ashauta, and fill it up with blobs of ink, because then you're safe, no matter what.
The ashauta is not effective if the part that was written was erased, then
the ashauta won't be effective anymore, right?
You ruin it.
Yeah.
But if the blob maintain intact, then you're fine.
That's good. Okay. Let's go on. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Leishanu Ela Be'ina Edim B'Ksav. Rabbi Yochanan says that no, this that we're saying, that if you have the edim two lines or more away, for two blank lines, if you have between the shtar and the edim, that it's possible is only between the edim and the body of the shtar. Avobin edim l'ashauta, but he says if it's between the edim and the ashauta, after the shita achas possible. Then he says the opposite. Not like Rav is saying that you can have as much space as you want, but rather even if you have one blank line,
it's possible.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
It has to be directly underneath the signature. It has to be immediately underneath. Now there is a machlokas rishonim on the question discussing the issue: is Rav Yochanan necessarily arguing with Rav or not necessarily? On the surface, he's arguing with Rav. On the other hand, another way of looking at it is that maybe what Rabbi Yochanan means like this: if you're going to fill up the space with ink, then, like Rav says, you can have as much space as you want as long as it's filled up with ink or lines or dots or what have you. If, on the other hand, if you don't have anything in there at all, then even one blank line would make it possible.
And the answer is, we don't know.
Those are two different ways of understanding it among the Rishonim. I believe
It'll just fill it in.
If you blur it in, then fine. But until it's blurred
in,
No, because that's another that we discussed yesterday. Once the shtar is delivered by the loiva to the malva, then that's it. Nothing more can be added or changed or fixed up or whatever in it. If you do it while the loiva still has it in its possession, the malva looks at it and says, "Hey, wait a minute, we got a problem over here. There's too much space." Sure, go ahead, fill it up with krovim, fill it up maybe with tiyut or whatever, but not after.
When I'm the Leva near the Malva, when the loan's paid off, we destroy the shtar so that no one can take the hentek and do the monkey.
We're going to actually discuss later on in our parrot the question of what we do. Do we expect that the shtar is going to be returned by the Malva to the Leva and he's going to rip it up, or do we write a shoiver? Do we write a receipt? That's the basic concept that comes up
so
in a number of places.
If you write a receipt, then we're back to where we started, and you can't say that we just rely on the fact that no one's going to destroy a good shtar, because this could be a used shtar that someone found on the street.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, usually, though, once the loiva gets back his shtar, he will rip it up.
But that was one logic.
I mean, Tosfos points out another distinction also. There's a difference in that if all you have there was tiyuta and then you erase it, then it's not going to be necessarily distinguishable what was there before. As opposed to if you had actual letters there and then you erase them, it's still going to be distinguishable if there were letters there beforehand. Okay.
With today's technology, you
today's technology, we're not talking today's. I mean, today's technology, you could laser all the ink off the paper, and you wouldn't know the difference.
You would.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah.
You could laser it off.
Yeah, but come on.
What's
what we're talking about. Okay. All right, so anyway, so one way of looking at it again is that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with Rab and saying that you cannot have any space between the Edim and the Ashauta. The other way of looking at it is he's qualifying it. If you don't have a Tirta, like we said before, then you can't even have, then you can't have any empty space. Okay. Abel ben Edim la'ashauta after the Shitacha fall. Yeah. So the question is, Maishno ben Edim la'ashauta. Now, why is it we're saying that if there's any space between the Edim and the Ashauta? You're saying the problem is Duma Gaius Liloy, again you may cut off the top star, the cost of Huva Aid of the Shitachas, and what you're going to do then is you're going to write a complete star with the signatures of the Edim all in one line. In other words, you're going to have one blank line above the Ashauta. You're going to write in that one blank line on such and such a date, Reuven borrowed $100 from Shimon, signed Yehuda ben Yisachar and Zvulun ben Dan. Vikasavar and Rabbi Yochanan would hold Shtar Habahu Ve'ed of the Shitachas Kosher. He would hold that a Shtar that has the body of the Shtar and the Edim all on one line is Kosher, which, by the way, is the Halacha. The Tashbates, one of the late Rishonim or early Achronim, points out an interesting thing that comes from this. He says the minhag used to be that when you wrote a Ksuba, you would write it with very wide margins because it would look nice that way. It looks fancier. The problem is that if you have wide margins and you have the signatures of the Edim at the end, you have what we're saying over here. You could write a one-line thing before it, and then you have a problem. Therefore, he says the minhag developed to make, we've all seen in the museums and catalogs and whatever, these pictures of old-style illuminated, beautifully illuminated ksugas with pictures and verses and whatnot on the sides. He says that's where that minhag developed from, so that you don't have a problem that you could end up with a shtar with the signatures of the Edim right after it.
All the ksuvas that I see, the thing goes after the letters. They don't give you any breathing room.
Well, yeah, so another way of doing it is just that you don't have wide margins. Nowadays, yeah, a lot of mass-produced ksuvas don't have wide margins or whatever, but yeah. Oh. Anyway, so in that case, that's fine. Then, why don't we have to be concerned then by the same logic when it comes to the actual shtar itself, and the signatures of the Edim, and we said you can't have two blank lines over there. But fine, you could have one. You could have one line over there with Edim at the end of it. But Omer, and then he'll claim Anol Rabbis BeEdim Udavi. He'll say, you know why there are three Edim on the Shtar? One in line with the text of the one line Shtar, and the other two below it. Because again, I wanted to have a lot of Edim. I wanted to make the thing more piercing or whatever. So you'll have, let's say again, you'll take a regular Shtar. You'll cut off the body of the Shtar. So you won't have the Edim together with it. You'll have those one and a half or two or whatever, as we were discussing before, blank lines over there. You'll write a one-line shtar on such and such a date, plenty borrowed from me money, signed Ed number one, Ed number two. Underneath it, you're going to have the signatures of the original two Edim, which now you're going to call Ed number three and Ed number four. When it comes to basing, well, why do you have them arranged in such a way? You have one Ed here, one Ed here, one here, and one here. Well, I wanted to add more Edim. I wanted the thing to have more piercing or whatever. So why aren't we concerned about that? The answer is, Kasavar, Rabbi Yochanan holds, Korki Hai Gavner, if you have a situation like that, Ed Mekayimin Oisim in Edim Shalomata, Elamina Edim Shalomayla. In that case, then Taka, the only way to validate such a shtar would not be by using the lower Edim, the ones that originally belonged to the original shtar, which have now been cut off. You will have to use the Edim that are on the same line as the shtar. And since he forged those signatures, we'll find out fast enough that those were in fact forged, and he'll be in trouble. That's the point. In other words, what we're going to do is he's going to come with a one-line shtar that says that Pliny borrowed money from me, signed Reuven and Shimon. You have, meanwhile, there are signatures of Levi and Yehuda over there. Now, under normal circumstances, if you had four Edim on the shtar, you only need two, really. So therefore, you could say, even if we can't recognize Reuven and Shimon's signatures, under normal circumstances, we would say, fine, as long as we can recognize Levi's and Yehuda's signatures, we're good. Either we'll call Levi and Yehuda themselves to base in, we'll have other people recognize their signatures, et cetera, et cetera. Here, what we're saying is, because we have a one-line shtar with Edim at the end of that one line, as well as Edim underneath that, we're saying we're going to ignore Levi and Yehuda. We're not going to call them in to validate the shtar at all. If we want the shtar validated, he's going to have to bring in Reuven and Shimon. So either Reuven and Shimon themselves are going to come in and say, these are not our signatures, it's forged. or whatever. The point is that when you come to validate it, nobody's going to say that these are Reuven and Shimon signatures, because they're not. The guy himself forged them, and therefore the forgery will be discovered.
The signatures on the same line are the forged ones.
Are the forged ones, right? So that's why Rabbi Yochanan is saying, if they're not forged, then those are the ones you have to be Mekayim. You can't be Mekayim, the ones underneath that, because yes, he may have cut that off of an existing shtar, and you have already two valid signatures there. As opposed to, again, with the Asharta, and one logic is also, first of all, by the way, you were talking before about the size of shtaris, so that Rashbam specifically says that the Rabbanan didn't want to make that distinction that a small shtar should be possible and a large shtar should be kosher. A shtar of any size is kosher. Again, it's not like it has to be on a certain on legal size paper or whatever.
It would be suspicious.
No, but that's why we say you have to use the upper edim in this case. So if you have a one line shtar, the only signatures we're going to be looking at to try and validate are the ones that are on the same line.
Even a Torah signature.
Yeah. Well.
See my
star
here. Okay. It's a small star, but everybody recognizes it. It's got the signature.
Ha-ha. But anyway, the
signature is on it. So. Yeah.
And there's one line here.
The other logic is if we say that Rabbi Yochanan is disagreeing with Rav, where Rav was saying that you can have as much space as possible as long as Matayat, as long as you fill it up with blobs of ink, whereas Rabbi Yochanan is holding you can't even have one space, the logic as it would be, the reason why we said we allow Edim that leeway is because most Edim are not necessarily so experts as to be able to write close to existing Tetra without smudging it or whatever, as opposed to Beis Din writes Asharitas and Henfix and whatever all the time. They're more familiar with it, so they will know how to be able to write it directly under the signatures of the Edim, and therefore there's no reason to allow them any leeway, unlike with Edim. So ultimately, what we're saying is that that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. If you have blank space of any amount between the Edim and the Asharta, then no good, because you could conceivably write a one-line shtar on that, and since it has an Asharta, you wouldn't know that it's no good. As opposed to between the shtar and the Edim, to have two blank lines over there, even though you could cut it off and write a new shtar on that blank line, that's not an Edim. That's no problem, because if you want to validate that shtar, you're going to need to use the Edim that are actually on that line. Tosfos discusses, by the way, over here a whole issue involved over here. Is there necessarily an issue? Never mind. That really belongs more to the next. We talked about before, and we'll talk about more tomorrow. Beis Hashem, this whole business about the shtar and the edim being on a place that was erased. We'll discuss tomorrow, Beis Hashem, some details about it. The Gemara itself is going to discuss to a certain extent the question of what if parts of it are erased more than once. We'll discuss that. But you also have issues involving the places of where the Edim themselves sign being erased or not. So Tosfos gets into a whole discussion about that, where maybe one thing, if you have space between the Edim signatures, that mitigates, because then that makes it less likely that there was something written in between there.
Why? For it being erased between this?
Because you don't usually write anything between the signatures of the Edim.
But that space could have been something that's erased.
No, but then
who would sign there?
You're not going to sign between
the previous signature.
No. But if we're worried about the signatures themselves being forged, you got to be Mekayim then. We're talking about the signatures themselves are valid. The Edim themselves sign valid signatures.
No,
the question is whether we have to be concerned that there may have been something else written above or below the signatures of the Edim. But if you have a space between the signatures of the Edim, that's less of an issue. And in fact, because what's going to be written between the signatures of the Edim?
Another signature.
No, but another signature. So what?
A different age.
So what? As long as you have two Edim left that are valid signatures, then it's okay. So we'll talk about it more tomorrow, Beis Hashem, in more detail.
It's possible to write a